Welcome back to This Week in Crime. Wait, this isn't This Week in Crime.
But we're here to tell you about our podcast called This Week in Crime.
Where we tell you about crimes that happened this week, but not this year.
We're two friends who talk about crime, and also sometimes not crime.
Yeah.
Every Thursday.
Yep, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcast.
Basically anywhere.
Like Instagram.
Yes, and Twitter. Yep. See you Thursday.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Awesome to hear. What's going on?
Well, I was up all night trying to finish this little case that I have for us today.
You were?
I was.
Not me.
I know. Well, you go to bed at 8, so.
I do.
Yeah.
I get up early.
I know. My little new Fitbit that I got said I got 3.58 minutes of sleep last night.
That's not enough, my
That's
friend.
So not enough, but that's okay. It's worth it. Our podcast peeps are worth it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So what you got for us today?
Oh, I've got an interesting case today. The United States, we have our famous missing persons, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I bet you can name some. We have Timothy Pitson, mm-hmm, which we did
which
earlier,
we did.
And somebody came forward saying it was him, but unfortunately it turned out it was not. Madeleine McCain actually is not from the United States, but she's another very famous missing person. And who else? Maura Murray. Yes, Maura Murray is like probably right now one of the most famous mm-hmm choice of missing persons that podcasts tend to deal with right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they think it's solvable.
I think it is solvable.
So do I. So I think it's that people are, you know, tending to push to get some resolution on that.
And I hope they do. I really
As
hope they do.
Do. I.
Well, this case I had never heard of before. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. This one takes place in Goderich, Ontario,
up
in our Canadian friend's way.
Canada.
I've heard it pronounced two ways. It's Goderich or Goderich.
Sounds the same to me, but okay.
Okay, so Goderich, Ontario is located on the eastern shore of Lake Huron at the mouth of the Maitland River in southwest Ontario. It's a port town where freighters regularly dock in the harbor and load up grain or salt from the local mine. On the morning of Wednesday, May 31st, 1995, Misty Nicole Murray, no relation to Maura, age 16, told her parents she would be home late because she had band practice. She put on her green nylon marching band jacket with the SDHS lettering on the chest. And it also had her name Misty down one of the sleeves. And she sat in her dad's red Trans Am with the top down.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. She was smiling and kind of joking with her dad, saying, you know what? I'm going to get my license soon. You better watch out. And her dad made some kind of bad joke about how women are bad drivers or something mm-hmm like that. And they all, he awesome tousled her hair. They were just joking and goofing off. And her mother finally came to the car and Misty slid over and Dad drove them all to school.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom was a teacher at the high school, and she specialized in kind of special ed, mm-hmm, I guess. Misty attended all her classes that day and even visited the school nurse, although for reasons why we'll never know. And around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Misty called her mother at the high school. Although she wasn't able to talk to her mother, she did leave a message. But unlike any other normal school day, Misty never made it back home. Now, Misty has quite of a backstory, let me tell you. Misty was born Jean Marie on December 28th, 1978, to a woman named Darlene. At the time of her birth, Darlene was a young woman living her life in poverty and substance abuse. She was an alcoholic, and she drank all through her pregnancy.
Ooh.
Life was very unstable for this young mother and daughter team. They moved a lot, and Misty, or Jean Marie, had a revolving door of babysitters. Finally, when she was 2 years old in 1980, Misty was taken away from her mother and placed in a therapeutic foster home. She lived there for 3 years until social workers felt that she was mentally healthy enough to be adopted out. And at that point, Darlene relinquished custody of Misty. At the age of 5 years old, weighing only 32 pounds, Stephen and Anne Murray adopted Misty.
How old was she?
She was five.
Weighing 32 pounds?
Small.
Malnourished.
Now, no.
Okay.
She was small. She had a small head. She had learning disabilities. She had behavioral problems.
Fetal alcohol syndrome.
And she had ear problems. Yes. Now, at the time, they didn't suspect that she had the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, as it's called now. But now, looking back on it, her mother, Anne, thinks that she probably did have it. And actually, I looked at statistics, and this is sad. One in 1,000 live births in the U.S. are born with fetal alcohol syndrome disorder.
Really?
Yeah. Oof. You would think that that would change with all the information that's out there.
I guess.
Yeah. Anne had said that getting Misty acclimated to her new life with the Murrays was not easy. And actually, they never knew a child could be that troubled.
Mm-hmm.
Misty started losing clumps of her hair. She was consistently having nightmares and would sob uncontrollably given any moment. She was also asking them, what had she done that made her foster parents get rid of her? Besides all these problems, Misty also did not have a fear of strangers. None whatsoever. I mean, me, I don't have a fear of strangers, but for a little kid, it was
probably the revolving door of
babysitters and
babysitting.
People.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She would crawl into strangers' laps if they were sitting down, or she would walk up to them and start talking to them, and then she would ask if she could come live with them.
Oh,
very sad.
That is sad.
In October of 1994, Misty, with the help of the Murrays and with their permission, found her birth mother, helped her find her birth mother, Darlene. And when the reunion happened, Misty ran up to Darlene and hugged her and called her mommy and just acted like there was nothing wrong. There was no animosity. There was no distance between them, they said. They just acted like everything was fine. And actually, ever since they first met, they had been spending at least once a month together for weekends on a shopping trip or just visiting other relatives, getting to know her biological grandbrothers.
Was the mother better at this time? Was she substance-free?
She did have a... One article said it was a husband, but another one said it was more common law.
Mm-hmm.
So articles I read, she was employed and
she
seemed to be
better
than what she was when she was a younger woman. And in fact, they had been planning a trip for the weekend that Misty disappeared. They were going to go to Halifax and visit her.
Nova Scotia.
And they were going to visit her biological grandparents. And she was very excited. She talked about it constantly. She already had her suitcase packed with tons of photographs that she wanted to show her grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And she even had $200 in spending money on her dresser. But when she went missing, none of that was taken. It was still in her room as she left it.
Mm.
When Misty didn't come home, her parents called around to Misty's friends. They verified that Misty had left school that day and had been there all day. But they didn't have band practice that night. At first, her parents thought she may have ran away. But then they got to thinking about how easy it is that she could be manipulated due to her past.
Yes, she seems a little immature for her age, which would be totally expected.
Mm-hmm. The local police regarded her as a runaway, too, and spent one whole day looking for her.
Not one whole day.
Just
all day?
One.
Just one.
A whole day looking for her as an alive runaway. They then immediately assumed that Misty was dead and searched accordingly. But let's say after a week of looking for Misty, they did not write down anything as the runaway or anything. They started writing down the victim without any...
Did they find something that would lead them to that?
Not that anyone's aware of.
A little presumptuous.
They did an extensive canine, air, and shoreline searches, as well as dozens of underwater dives looking for Misty's body. But none of the searches recovered any trace of her. A few days after Misty was reported missing, police interviewed the parents, Anne and Steve. The police asked the frantic parents where they were the night Misty went missing, as police are apt to do, right? The first people to target are the parents or family. Later, the father said that, you know, hindsight 2020 thing. He said, you know, I have a terrible memory, as do I, said Jennifer. But I also wasn't in the right mind. And when they asked where I was that night, I had completely forgot that I had taken my boat out that night. And so I didn't tell the police.
How do you forget that?
It was a quick boat ride, like 15-minute boat ride. We'll get to that.
Okay.
The police also spoke with a 19-year-old man that Misty had just recently started dating. And he claimed that he last saw Misty on May the 30th, the day before she went missing. And he knew this because he cashed his welfare check on the 30th because he had to pay rent. But his bank records indicate that the transaction was actually made on the 31st of May. But as far as I know, he had been cleared. And you know banks. I mean,
I think they
in the old days.
They used to.
If you made a deposit after one. It would go on the next day's record.
I know that because I was fired from a bank.
So the police also asked for any staff or students at the high school she attended to come forward with any information that they might have. The high school counselor told police that Misty confided in her that she had felt threatened by the possessiveness of an ex-boyfriend a few weeks prior to her disappearance.
Misty did?
Misty.
Misty had told the counselor that?
Misty told her counselor that.
Okay. That's not the 19-year-old, is it?
No, that was the new boyfriend.
Okay.
Two students then reported to the police that they were passengers in a car, and they were driving to Clinton, which is about 15 minutes from Godric, and they saw Misty walking on the highway heading towards Clinton. They even beeped her horn and waved at her. And one of the students said they knew for sure that it was Misty because she was wearing her green band jacket. And this sighting occurred 2 days after police claimed she was last seen. Now, the police only spoke with these students for about 5 minutes. And then it was only a year later that they contacted the students and asked for a written statement. Some students reported seeing Misty near a bus stop, but the police dismissed it as a case of mistaken identity after the police were told that a friend of Misty's had also taken a bus to Clinton that very same day. But they never thought to ask if the friend had the same green jacket that Misty had. She didn't, nor did they compare times, which Misty's friend left hours way earlier than Misty was reported seeing at the bus stop. Eight more people separately came to the police claiming to have seen Misty on the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday after the police claimed that she had been last seen. One girl who knew Misty reported that she'd spoken to her at a shop in Goodrich on June 1st, the next day. She told at least one other student and one teacher before the fact was even reported to the police. Misty allegedly told the girl that she had been driving with friends in nearby Clinton, Ontario, and that she would maybe see the girl in school on Monday. Yet the police never sent anyone to interview the store employees.
What? Is this like Mayberry? Like, where is...
It's about... now they have about 7,500 people in the town.
It's still tiny.
Okay. So in 1995, I'm sure it wasn't anymore.
Yeah, it's like where we grew up.
Exactly.
And I could imagine all that fumbling would be the same.
Yeah, but we had a better sheriff in our town.
I guess.
Three more fellow classmates and two employees of a Midway carnival at the Clinton Fair recalled Misty being there. In fact, when the police showed one of the employees or carnies a picture of Misty, he distinctly remembered seeing Misty and two other girls with her because they were so drunk that he wouldn't even let them on the ride that he was operating. The other employee, fair employee, told the police, quote, "I'm positive it was your girl." In late June, witnesses saw Misty or someone very much that looked like her in London, Ontario, which is probably about an hour's drive from Goodrich and Clinton. And some people put her near the Dundas and Adelaide Corner, which is known to harbor street children, and especially in the summer. But, you know, police, they didn't really go down there. They did go later, but they never even told the Murrays about these sightings until it was reported on the media.
That would be horrific to be watching TV and see that.
One man claimed Misty had asked him for change at a bus stop, and another woman claimed to have spoken to a girl matching Misty's description who was crying in the mall. Then there were other ones who claimed to see Misty in some of the seedier parts of town. They said she was strung out on crack, working as a prostitute, and with a pimp. The police always said that these are unconfirmed.
Everything is unconfirmed until you confirm it, so that doesn't mean anything.
So on June 15th, six Godrich police officers drove the hour to London and investigated the sightings. When they came back, they said they had nothing, that everything was just couldn't be checked out.
Confirmed.
Yeah. Steve Murray and Anne spent weeks in London searching for their daughter, London, Ontario. I don't want people thinking that they're flying over to see Nico. But
hi, Nico.
They spent the summer there searching for their daughter. And Steve actually said that he was in one of the actual raunchier parts of town. Mm-hmm. And he was driving and he looked down an alley, and walking away from him was a girl and a boy. And from the back, he swore it was Misty. And he pulled the car over right there, jumped out, didn't even care where the car was, jumped out and ran to the couple. And the only thing that happened is he scared him. It wasn't Misty. It was just a case of mistaken identity. And also, interesting enough, three Toronto off-duty detectives reported seeing a girl begging on the streets of Toronto. They felt the girl wasn't very streetwise. It just kind of stuck in their head about that.
She stuck out as not,
right. And it was only returning back to work that they saw the child find poster. Mm-hmm. And they swore that they had saw Misty.
Did she have a distinctive look?
They said she had a gap between her front teeth and a mole on her cheek.
Okay, so she had some distinguished marks.
She did have some, she did have some marks. So instead of further investigating any of these sightings or claims, the police focused all their attention on the dad, Stephen Murray. He was their prime suspect. Even though there was no solid evidence against him.
Or a body.
They seemed to develop a taste they wanted to get. They just knew he did
tunnel vision. They got tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm. Even with all the witnesses coming forward with the sightings of Misty, police still believed she had been killed right after she disappeared. So 3 months after Misty was reported missing, a couple who had a boat docked in the harbor was interviewed by the police. They claimed that they had been at the harbor all day on May 31st, and they saw Steve leave on his boat with Misty, or actually an unidentified girl, is what they said.
Did Misty look at all like Anne?
No.
Okay.
But at least they think it was May 31st. They're not for sure. But when Steve returned, he was alone.
Let me just say for the record, I'd be a terrible witness. I don't know what today's date is. I couldn't tell you. I can tell you what I did. But like, say if they would come to me in 6 months from now and say, what did you do on this date?
It all runs together.
I would have no idea.
No. To me, it just means it was uneventful. That if you couldn't remember, it was an uneventful day.
Yeah.
But it was funny. They had never recalled seeing Steve and this mystery woman before the police had actually talked to him, even though they knew that Misty had been missing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just suggestive thing.
Oh, I got you. Yep.
You know, the police are coming to me. Maybe I did see that.
Or I did see him.
I saw him. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I did see him out there, but I'm not for sure of the date. On September 15th, 1995, police arrested and charged Stephen Murray with second-degree murder of his daughter, Misty.
They don't have anything.
The town was shocked.
They don't have a body. They don't have blood. They don't have anything.
A friend of Misty and fellow bandmate told reporters that Misty loved her dad and never spoke badly at all about her parents, and said the weeks leading up to that weekend, all she talked about was going to see her grandparents in Halifax.
Mm-hmm.
Also talked about the red Trans Am convertible that his dad just bought. She was so excited about that one.
What if it was a T-top?
I don't know. It said convertible. So after he was arrested, another boater called and came forward saying he and three relatives saw Stephen out in the boat with an unidentified woman on May 31st. And they also said he returned by himself. So 3 days after Stephen was arrested for the murder of his daughter, the police suddenly became aware that there was a big freight liner parked in the harbor on the day that Misty went missing. It was a salt ship named the Agawa Canyon. You'd be thinking, well, gosh, sailors coming in, maybe got drunk. If Misty was anywhere near there, maybe something happened to her.
And being a young little 16-year-old, right. She would, like, yeah. eat up that attention. Right. And...
So, believe it or not, the police actually did go talk to the crew on September 19th.
Good.
Now,
September 19th. So we're looking at
this was five
4 months later, 5 months.
Yeah, this was after. Now, Ontario law states that officers must keep detailed notes of interviews.
Had they been doing that up until this point?
If they have, they weren't doing it now. Their notes pertaining to interviewing of this crew consist of a list of names with a brief note at the bottom saying none of the above persons could be of assistance.
That's it? So it'd be like Jennifer, nope. Cam, and then...
Knew nothing. Couldn't help. It's even unclear if they even ran background checks to see if they had any police records or anything.
I would think they're on a ship like that. There has to be a ton of people, mostly men, I'm going to guess.
I would think so.
So...
Especially in 95. But
the idea would be probably a lot of them didn't, but there could be one person mm-hmm. who did.
So Stephen Murray went to trial on September of 1997. The Crown claimed that Stephen had ordered Misty to clean the boat on May 31st. Then he joined her at 7 p.m., took her out in the middle of the lake and killed her. Then dumped her body in the water where the temperatures were really, really cold so the body wouldn't float to the surface.
Is that a thing?
I guess. But this is what they claimed happened, but yet they couldn't give anyone a motive on why he would do it.
Maybe she didn't clean the boat good
well enough.
But I doubt that. I mean, she's a kid. I mean, all kids do a crappy job.
Seriously, if I would kill my kids every time they did a crappy job,
exactly,
they would have been gone by age 7.
Yep.
It was only during Stephen's pretrial that his lawyer discovered that the police had hidden over 97 sightings of Misty in the weeks after she was reported missing.
Say what?
They never reported the sightings to the family.
I mean, that is a small town. They where never we grew up. Like, it wasn't.
They never reported it to Child Find.
Not to mention, in small towns, everybody's nosy. And if you saw that there was a missing kid in your town, you know people in town would be all over that stuff.
Not only did they not report it to the family, they didn't report it to Child Find, which is an organization which helps locate the missing children. And also, the police listed Child Find as a possible witness to the murder. So Misty's parents were forbidden to have any contact with them, so they could not get any information that the organization may have had. So remember the trip to London that the 6 police officers mm-hmm. took to interview people
mm-hmm.
that claimed to have seen Misty
mm-hmm. and
came back with no leads?
Yeah.
Anne went there herself that year after the police found out about, the sightings.
I bet you Anne got some info, didn't she?
Her investigation mm-hmm. resulted in 12 sworn affidavits of people like pawnbrokers and fast food restaurant employees confirming that they clearly saw Misty in London during the first part of June 1995. They also stated in the affidavit that they were never spoken to by the Goderich Police Department.
Who pays their salary?
I'm assuming the people.
It's sort of a rhetorical question, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So not only did the police not properly search for Misty, but when they sent out the missing person information and they sent it out nationally, they had the wrong physical information. They listed her as 3 inches taller than she was and 20 pounds heavier. She was like 5'1" and she weighed 105 pounds. So at the trial, the 3 people that claimed they saw Stephen take Misty to the boat, they testified against him. And then none of them could testify that they saw the huge freightliner. At trial, Stephen Murray admitted that he did go to the harbor alone that night at about 7 p.m. and he took about a 20-minute ride around, just to spin around the harbor. He then came back to the dock where 2 fishermen, who also testified, helped him bring his boat out of the water. And by 8:05, Stephen had brought the boat to a shop to have it washed and waxed, which was also verified by a testimony at court. And then he returned to work at his tavern called the Park House Tavern, and he worked there for the rest of the evening. All of this was confirmed by witnesses. The timing didn't work out, and Stephen didn't have enough time to kill Misty like the police had claimed. There was no time.
So I'm going to guess if this is like the U.S., he probably was getting his boat ready for boating season because it was the beginning of summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that makes sense.
So he was getting it cleaned out from the winter.
Would he often take it on spins, like in the afternoon, the evening, early evening?
Probably just started it up to see if it was still working, if the battery was dead or whatnot, or why not? Maybe he hadn't had it out all year, you know, and so he just took it out for a spin. Who knows what men do with their boats? Seriously, my stepdad was like constantly fiddling with his boat.
Oh, I know. It's constantly. Like their hobby. I get it.
So, and remember the man that had the three relatives with him?
Mm-hmm.
The three relatives also testified in court. And they knew Stephen, and they testified that they just saw Stephen alone.
Okay.
So who the other man saw, I have no idea. Also, during the trial, eight people came to testify to say that they saw Misty after the police claimed that she was murdered. The trial lasted 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
That's pretty long.
On nothing. News reports say the jury took 45 minutes to find Stephen Murray not guilty of second-degree
murder. Thank goodness.
Murder.
I was going to not be happy if it went the other way.
Stephen's lawyer, Brian Greenspan, claimed it was the fastest jury decision he had ever had in his entire career. And then I later found out in an article in the Toronto National Post in 1999, one of the jurors actually sent Anne, the mother, a note saying that, wow, if they thought 45 minutes was fast, in that time, 12 jurors all went to the bathroom and two even took a smoke break. So it was pretty
open.
Yeah, they knew it was.
I mean, they don't have anything.
There's nothing concrete. They didn't even have a motive. Why?
And
there was nothing.
Those people adopted her out of the goodness of their hearts. So
and they knew
not
that she was troubled.
Exactly.
And they knew. The judge, in his summation to the jury, stated that the Crown's theory was unreasonable within itself. In addition to being riddled with internal inconsistencies, he suggested that the police's version of events were demolished by the citing evidence. The judge also stated the Leviathan of the lakes, the Agawa Canyon, was in the harbor the entire day of May 31st. It was busy, it was noisy, yet none of the Crown's witnesses could remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if it's docked, all those sailors are coming ashore, too.
Right, and probably drinking. Mm-hmm. And I mean, somebody very well could have taken Misty
easily
and gotten rid of her or put her in the ship and taken her somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Trafficked her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the whole trial financially ruined the Murrays.
Mm.
And I read somewhere that only the wealthy can survive being accused of murder.
Oh, totally. Oh, and that usually wipes them out, too. But the difference is the money buys them their innocence.
Right. Well, but it also it doesn't deplete their entire life savings.
I mean, often it does, but that's...
But not the wealthy, usually.
Yeah.
So not only did they lose their daughter, they lost everything. The house, the car, the boat, even Stephen's pub had to be sold at a loss. Even though Stephen was acquitted of murder, some people in the town still thought he murdered her.
Once you have that black mark on you, then you're, you know.
There are a lot of people in the town of Godrich that claimed that he only got off because he had a big, fancy lawyer charming the jury.
Yeah, that and no evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's what it's...
He said, she said, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Stephen found it really hard to find work, and at one point, he said that he put an ad in the paper to shovel driveways and sidewalks just to make some cash.
Aww.
And he actually got a job cleaning mailboxes around the town. Later, he became an over-the-road trucker driving office equipment across Canada. And on the back of his tractor trailer, he put a huge missing persons poster of Misty, along with the number of a child find, in hopes that someone would see it during some of his travels.
It's a good idea.
When the detective in charge of Misty's case saw the poster on the back of Stephen's truck, he told the media that this was not a missing child's case. She was not missing. She's dead.
And he knew this how? Maybe he knows more than he's saying.
Well, he said, this is a murder investigation. Make no mistake. She is out there in the lake and we will find her.
Okay.
No matter. Even after
it's
this
2019,
trial,
2019. Have they found her yet?
So a year after Stephen was found not guilty, the detective that had just said that was a murder, supposedly said that he called all over North America to find a sonar device that would help them locate underwater objects.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, After the help of 9 police officers, 2 Coast Guards, and many boats filled with high-tech equipment, nothing has been found of Misty. Stephen's lawyer was quoted saying that he didn't think the detective is insincere of his beliefs. I think he is wrong-minded and mean-spirited. In fact, the police have spent years since Stephen's acquittal insisting that they were correct and that Misty was murdered and not a runaway. In March of 2000, a Canadian television show did an interview with the Ontario Provincial Police spokesperson, and they asked, "Since the disappearance of Misty Murray, have you found anything that would link her to being at the bottom of Lake Huron?" The response was, "No, but we're going to continue to look at the lake."
And it's 2019.
And it's 2000. Well, this was in 2000.
I know, but there would be nothing left anyway.
So Anne, Misty's mother, filed a complaint regarding the OPP with Professional Standards Bureau on how the Goderich police handled this investigation and how she and Stephen were actually treated by them. And as an example of how she was treated, get this, an officer had came to her that was from the Bureau and told her that if she dropped the complaint, he would see that she got a letter that Misty had written them. When she said no to the offer, he simply stated that she's not going to get the letter. And the police neither confirmed nor denied that they had made this offer to Anne. Well, the letter was written a week before Misty disappeared, right? Uh-huh. Misty wrote this a week before she disappeared. And Anne and Stephen had turned it over to the police before Stephen became a suspect, just thinking that it might have a clue or they can look into it. The letter was read at trial, and the police never returned it when the trial was over.
So they were trying to blackmail them with their daughter's letter? Mm-hmm. Shame on them.
Well, they neither confirmed nor denied that they did that. But the letter written...
Did they get the letter back?
As far as I know, they haven't. The letter was written to both parents, and in it, Misty apologizes for being a difficult child. And quote, "If I were you, a long time ago, I would have given up on me. But I know that you love me." The letter is signed, "Your daughter, forever," with the number 4, dash ever. Always, Misty Nicole Murray. So also, in late September of 1999, Child Find received 2 calls from people claiming to have seen Misty in London, Ontario again. I guess the local media was running like an update on the... It's kind of a big case, and it's actually a big case in Canada, and they were doing an update on the Misty Murray case. A man who had seen all the media that was going on in television at that time claims to have seen a woman in her late teens resembling Misty at a mission or a homeless shelter. He said the woman had on a dark shirt and was carrying a suitcase with a Thunder Bay sticker. I have no idea what Thunder Bay is. I probably should have looked that up.
Probably a sports steamer.
He said that she stuck out to him because she was handing out homemade necklaces to the staff to thank them for helping her with her troubles. Another caller remembers seeing Misty at a youth shelter in London several months after she disappeared in 95, but didn't call until 99. The police did investigate it, but said nothing came of those 2. In 2000, the Ontario Civilian Commission on Police Services ordered York Region Police to audit the investigation and determine if the leads that came in after Misty's disappearance were adequately explored. A year later, it was concluded that the original investigation was hampered by tunnel vision, and the officers failed to fully consider other suspects.
I said that earlier.
I know, I had it earlier
like
in my
psychic
stories. I know. A detective that was on the case in the beginning came forward to say that they still believe that there had been no credible sightings of Misty since the day she disappeared, but they were still searching. And he said that we know that there's somebody out there who has information on her disappearance. And in 2001, the police offered a reward for $25,000 in Canadian money to anyone with information leading to the arrest and conviction of a person or persons responsible for her disappearance and or death. The Murrays, of course, were thrilled about this, and they were finally happy that the police were
doing something
and not just stuck on this, mm-hmm. She was murdered. They stated that hopefully they, meaning the police, would look above ground as well as below.
The Murrays said that?
Mm-hmm. Now, The next part is from an article from the Free Press, and I pretty much copy-pasted it because I didn't want to get any of the information wrong when I typed it at 3 o'clock in the morning. I am citing the Free Press.
You are citing the Free Press. So anything that you say here on after.
Until I say quit, mm-hmm. is from the Free Press.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you
did
for
not plagiarize this
somebody
at all.
Else's work and giving them yes. the credit.
In early 2001, a homeless woman who called herself Mallory Morrigan Lane came into a shelter. Those who helped her were struck by her likeness to posters of what Misty Murray might have looked like at age 21. They had done age progression posters. And they were virtually certain that the woman that they were with was Misty. They said, quote, "We are 99% positive that we have seen Misty Murray, who uses an alias and regularly accesses youth services in the downtown south area of Vancouver." Mm. This came in to wrote by two people who emailed their sightings to the Free Press and Child Find. They signed their emails to concerned citizens in Vancouver and saying that they were bound by confidentiality, and the pair appeared to work for social agencies running homeless programs along the Granville Street. Their description of Lane matched the accounts of Emily Clark, a worker at a nearby shelter called Covenant House. Clark phoned Child Find March 23rd, saying a woman named Lane strongly resembled an age-enhanced photo of Misty she had seen on the back of a CIBC bill, which I believe is a bank. Lane had no valid identification and refused to have her picture taken. "These are by far the best sightings we have had of Misty since she disappeared," said Child Find's Lori Chapman, who has headed up the search for Misty. More promising clues were revealed when the Free Press reviewed confidential welfare records and phoned street workers and employees at a safe house. According to welfare records, Lane arrived in the Vancouver area last fall, staying a few months at a safe house. A worker there wrote descriptions of Lane, including characteristics matching Misty Murray, from the hazel greenish blue eyes to what experts called a distinguishing feature, a gap between her two front teeth. Workers said that Lane hid her true identity and was often vague about her background, but what little she did say could have been pulled from the biographies of Misty and when she was Jean Murray. Like Misty, Lane was born in Nova Scotia and spent early years in foster care. And like Darlene, Misty's birth mother, she said she lived on the streets of Toronto beginning at age 14. Misty often embellished or made up stories to impress others, and she also created a number of aliases, most of which included the initials M.M. At the safe house, Lane, like the other residents, had pictures taken on a camera that produced no negatives, but instead a sheet of images, so it was digital, mm-hmm. basically. A few months later, when Lane left, she demanded the sheet of pictures. When they gave it to her, she tore it to shreds. Lane went to even greater lengths to protect her identity. In February, she applied for and received social benefits. She did so even though welfare records show that she didn't provide valid identification, and that's a requirement in British Columbia. But in April, agency workers presented Lane with the ultimatum. You either provide a valid ID and apply for identification or get cut off from benefits. Lane chose to be cut off. "We doubt that she shared her true identity with anyone," wrote the citizens who emailed her sightings. In her desire for secrecy, Lane found an ally in the workers at Covenant House. They protected the bonds they forged with those seeking shelter. The cornerstone of their relationship is trust, so perhaps it's not surprising Covenant House refused to cooperate with Child Find when Chapman asked the shelter to gather information that might identify Lane. Chapman said that she encouraged the Covenant House to gather information about Lane without alerting her to the fact that they were hoping to make a positive identification. But the supervisor at the Covenant House refused, offering only to alert Child Find when Lane returned. But when Covenant House next phoned Child Find in early May, it was to deliver bad news. Lane had returned only to be confronted by a worker who told her officials suspected that she was Misty Murray. Lane then ran away, and by the end of May, she dropped out of sight. And that's kind of much my end of my copying and of that.
But thank I just you thought for that citing was, your source. That's yes. good.
On September 25th, police actually got a picture of this person, Lane.
Anne?
Phoned Anne and told her that they had the picture, and they went over to her house and showed her. And at first glance, they said that she was kind of startled and taken aback, and she took a deep breath, and she knew it was her daughter.
It is her daughter?
But as time kind of went by, she began looking closely at the picture. She's like, didn't think it was her. She thought that the bridge in the nose was too far apart, or just there was something about it.
Did she see the gap in the teeth and the mole on her face?
But she just came to terms that that wasn't her daughter. So I don't know if maybe she did recognize her and just thought that it, since it's been 6 years since her disappearance, she doesn't want to be found. And then she just stopped, or if she really believed that it wasn't her daughter. But after this sighting, Anne ended her search to find Misty. And she turned her focus to the rest of her family. She actually had two sons, biological. So on November 10th, 2001, Misty's family finally said goodbye to her. They held a mass at the St. Joseph Roman Catholic Church in Stratford. And Anne said that we just want to offer her back to God. It's time to put her back in his hands. So sometime during all of this, Stephen and Anne divorced. And a longtime family friend said that Stephen had remarried and located to Callander, which is a community outside of North Bay. But unfortunately, it is said by a friend, the same friend, that Stephen was killed on July 30th, 2018 on a work-related incident. The detective of this case, as of 2018, he's retired.
Of course he is.
But when he was asked, he still has the same perspective of the whole situation. He says, I definitely wouldn't have charged Stephen Murray if I thought he wasn't guilty.
I know police officers see a lot, and I know that usually the first people to suspect are the ones that are closest to them, especially with a child, but...
I know. So Misty remains missing, and it's unclear whether foul play is a factor, but her adoptive parents believe that she did run away, and she's probably dead, possibly from another homeless person or a pimp or from whatever. And her biological mother also thinks she's gone. It's kind of unclear why the police were so dead set against getting Stephen, the father, just going after him. Like the minute they thought she was dead, they just, like it said, tunnel vision, they went right after him. Some speculate that envy played a role. Stephen was handsome, popular, and successful. He ran one of the town's pubs, owned a speedboat, drove a new Trans Am convertible, and perhaps the temptation to tear down someone who seemed to have it all was too strong.
And so the detective did that to him?
That's what some people think. Other people feel that it's possible that these small town police officers thought it would be much more glamorous to investigate a murder than just some missing runaway teen. According to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, or NAMIS, over 600,000 individuals go missing in the U.S. every year.
That's incredible.
Fortunately, many missing children and adults are quickly found.
Do you have a stat on that? Because I'm curious. That's a lot.
However, that just says, however, and this is straight from the site, tens of thousands of individuals remain missing for more than 1 year, and many agencies consider them cold cases. It is estimated that 4,400 unidentified bodies are recovered each year, and approximately 1,000 of those bodies remain unidentified after 1 year in just the U.S. alone.
Wow.
As of today, you know, they offered the award of $25,000. It is now up to $50,000 as the police, as I found on the the police website. They are still looking at her. It is a cold case. But the amount of kids that run away every year is staggering. According to the National Runaway Safeline, which was formerly called the National Runaway Switchboard, they claim that between 1.6 to 2.8 million youths run away each year in the United States alone.
That's insane. Do you know what the how many come back?
Well, in 2018, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children said that they assisted law enforcement and families with more than 25,000 cases of missing children. 92% of those were runaways. And of those, more than 23,500 runaways reported 1 in 7 were victims of sex trafficking, mm-hmm. likely victims of sex trafficking. That's unreal.
Incredible.
But so far, there's not been anything on Misty besides, and you wonder, you know what, if the police had known or taken into account how Misty was impulsive or mm-hmm. how she
immature for her
was
age.
Very immature, mm-hmm. her growth and mentality were stunted. Mm-hmm. If they had taken that into account and if they had taken in all the sightings, you would almost think that Misty would have been found. Maybe she wouldn't have wanted to come home, but she probably would have been found.
I don't know.
I think, my opinion.
Also, she had no fear of people, so right. she would talk to them.
Right.
I could totally see a 16-year-old girl whose really mentality is like 11 or 12 years old. No mm-hmm. problem. Go up and talk to somebody or right. come here. You want to see my puppy?
Right.
You know,
or the men on the
ship,
Agawa Canyon.
You want a tour of the boat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come see my boat. Yeah. Totally. I mean, probably could have been solved. And it's so very sad that she's still one of Canada's missing mm-hmm. people.
And I think she knew she had it good at home. So she I don't did. Think
some people actually speculated, you know, everybody kind of hones in onto the nurse's visit, mm-hmm. you know, and they're like, well, gosh, you know, the nurse's visit. Nobody actually said what the nurse's visit was. And then they said, well, she had this boyfriend that was 19 years old. Maybe she was pregnant. Maybe that's why she ran away. Or
the other thing that occurred to me is with all of her background and things like that and being adopted from the mother who had substance
abuse
problems, mm-hmm. you know, schizophrenia hits you
around that time,
late teens. Mm-hmm. And maybe she had a break and then didn't really realize where she was or who she was, or I don't know.
You know, when I first read that, I'm thinking, well, maybe she went to the nurse for a headache and something just snapped, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. it didn't say when she went to the nurse. It could have been later in the afternoon or something, mm-hmm. but it's scary. It's one of my biggest fears that my children would go missing. It really is. And things like this terrify me.
And then you'd be charged for it? Could you imagine?
Or my husband, with no cause, with no motive, with no evidence?
I mean, if it's not heartbreaking enough that you lost your child, now you're having to deal with that?
Yeah. And just the financial situation, that's nothing compared to having all that happen. I would gladly live in a box if it meant having my child back.
It's terrible.
It's heartbreaking. But you'd never heard of it either, have you?
Nope.
No.
This is the other thing I was thinking. With that many kids missing, you know how easy it would be to pick up a ride with a truck driver, mm-hmm. get picked up here in St. Louis, and you end up in, oh, I don't know, Oregon or Seattle or San Diego. Those people don't know
Mexico.
That you're missing here from St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't make news with that many people go missing. Mm-mm. And so it would be really easy to take a child and get rid of them.
Now, I once read an article, and I can't cite it, but the article stated, and I was really surprised, that a lot of the sex trafficking, mm-hmm. it's very common to be held in Minnesota or all those border states mm-hmm. to Canada
mm-hmm. yeah.
because it's easy for them to transfer mm-hmm. them across the border without having to, you know.
It's very true.
So that could be something too. But mm-hmm. I don't know. The whole thing is scary. It scares the
it's
hell
terrible.
Out of me. No offense to Anne Murray. I totally understand what she did, but I don't know if I could ever just let her, my daughter, go. Well, after 6 years? 26 years, maybe.
But then
years.
Again, maybe she, and in her head, in her heart, in her head, she's not letting her go. It's just symbolic to try to get back to your life. You know
maybe.
What I mean?
Hopefully that's what
and
it
you
is.
Think about those two
I didn't
boys.
Think about that.
I don't know how old the boys are.
They
but,
were adults, I believe.
But younger than her, right? Were they younger than her?
No, they were older.
They were older than her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They were older
just,
than Misty.
Yeah. I mean, I see that. And again, she's only getting rid of her daughter symbolically.
Right.
I mean, she'd always be there for her, I'm sure. But you
but
have
I don't
to,
think
it's
I
sort
would.
Of like tough love with drugs. There is a time that you have to
yeah.
let go.
But I just always kind of wondered if maybe she did actually
see her
in that picture. And then just it dawned on her that Misty just really didn't want to be found. And mm-hmm. she knew Misty's background and she knew her troubled past. And she knew that she mm-hmm. just thought that maybe this is where Misty needed to be.
True. And I mean, you know
that
where
would be
we live.
So hard.
You know where we live. You could
yeah.
always come home. Good job, Jen. I've never heard that one.
No.
I pulled okay. a Jen comment there.
What?
I've never heard that one.
Never heard that. Yeah, it's just sad. But anyway.
All right. You want to tell the good people where they can find us?
All right, good people. You can find us at Twitter with our handle. I guess all the cool could say it's your handle at our True Crime Pod. We have a blog that I am trying really desperately to keep up to date. And that is www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. And on there, you can find links to our Etsy store with all our True Crime Podcast branded merchandise, t-shirts. We're adding more stuff as soon as we can come up with them. And as soon as I can figure out how to do it, we're adding it. There's also a link to our Patreon page if you wanted like to donate. We would be greatly appreciative if you did.
But we'd really like it if you done did appreciate us and give us some money.
Yeah, we would appreciate you donating.
We would appreciate you appreciating us.
We would appreciate it.
Very appreciated.
Yes. If you don't want to do like the whole monthly thing, we also have a PayPal donate button that you can like press and do all that transaction. Other than that, we are glad that you are here with us, and we thank you very much for listening to us droning on about things.
All right. Well, so remember, anyway, lock the doors
and keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Why are band uniforms so ugly? They really are.
I know.
I mean, it's like, come, we're not in 1960 anymore. Let's catch up. Come on.
That day, Maisie said, Maisie attended all of her classes. Fuck.
You get stuck on names.
Oh, all the time I was writing this, it was Mandy. I was doing Mandy.
Misty.
She's a fine girl.
Mandy. What a fine girl.
Well, that's Brandy,
what
but
a
yeah.
Good girl, you would be
good wife, you would be, but my life, my love, and my lady is the same.
Sorry,
people
Nico.
Say Brandy.
Brandy.
All right,
she's fine. Da, 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 da. Misty, think Misty.
Play Misty for me.
That's what I think.
And you know banks. I mean,
I think they
in the old
too.
Days
they used to
the, right. If you made a deposit after day, one,
did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It would go on the next day's record. Mm-hmm.
I know that because I was fired from a bank.
I know that because I used to kite checks all the time. Yeah. And I would write, if I wrote
that's
a check.
Illegal. Don't say that out loud.
Well, they you can't do that anymore, so they can't.
That's true.
The po-po came.
Boy, those were the days, weren't they?
Oh, the life of a poor girl.
These kids don't even know what it's like to be rich for 2 days until the bank catches up with you.
I know. That summer, Steve and Anne Murray spent weeks in London searching for his daughter, and he even
that's
said
not
that
Anne Murray the singer is it?
It's not Anne Murray
she's
the singer.
She's from Canada too.
She's not from Canada. Well, she is from Canada.
I know.
What's the song that she sang?
Lots of them.
Yeah.
Delta. She did the remake after.
Yeah.
Tanya.
I remember we had a fight about that at the bar once. Remember?
We did. We did.
We both won.
I know.
Thank
we did.
God that
thank
was before
you.
Computers, and thank God they had a trivia book.
Thank
God. Anyway. It was a salt ship named the Agawa Canyon.
That's really good, Jen.
Mm-hmm.
How do you say that again?
I think it's Agawa. Agawa. Uma. Agawa. That's the Wakapawa.
High school cheer.
Yeah. So Stephen Avery admits that he wow.
I was like, what?
What happened there?
Wow. Now that would be something.
Ooh. Toss sorry, I actually clipped on that one, Nico. I'm sorry.
You're a clipper.
First clipper. I'm a clipper. I'm a clipper. She's a clipper. Wouldn't you like to be
a
clipper
too?
Be a clipper.
Piss
me
off.
Okay, so Steve Murray. Steve Murray admits.
I like Stephen Avery better because that would get us some podcast listens, let me tell you.